Undoubtedly, you have thought about our liberty this week. This is the week to think of it. This is the week to celebrate it. It was said that John Adams believed that it was July 2nd everyone was going to be celebrating, because there were some who were on the fence, and John Adams came to the Congress and made this heart-pulling speech at the floor of Congress. He convinced many who were on the fence as to whether or not they would sign the Declaration of Independence, and he convinced them. And he walked away saying that he really believed that July 2nd would be the day that all of us celebrated and would be remembered. And so 2 days later, we all got our act together and decided to go ahead and celebrate that day. But the truth was is that it took two more days for, of course, Thomas Jefferson, who finished the Declaration of Independence. It was signed and ratified there on the 4th. And so we are celebrating today our birthday. In fact, I called Brother McCurry this morning, and I picked up the phone. He goes, "Happy birthday." And in my mind, I wanted to say, "My birthday's not for like two more weeks. What are you talking about?" Oh, yeah, that's right. And the truth is, this is our birthday as a country. It really is an incredible time for us. And I'm grateful for our liberty. I'm grateful that we as a nation were birthed. Even with all of the trouble and trial and trauma going on around us, I'm grateful that all of that led to the birth of a great nation. And I'm just going to say, it's not really popular to say it these days, but I was raised believing that America was the greatest nation on earth. And I still believe that, even if the liberal media wants to tell me otherwise. I just happen to believe that if everybody in the world's trying to get into this country, we've got something they want. And it really is a blessing that we get to be a part of this incredible nation and get to experience and enjoy the liberties that we enjoy. 56 men signed that Declaration of Independence, and this conviction would ultimately result in suffering on their behalf. They didn't sign it and then become wealthy. And what's sad is there's a narrative that it was a bunch of old rich white guys that they signed this thing, and they were old rich white guys, and it was an insider club. Well, every one of those men knew they were signing their death warrants, and they teased each other about the fact that this was treason and they were going to hang for what they had done. And every one of those men paid the price. So you just kind of consider some of the ways. Of those 56 men, five were captured by the British and tortured before they died. 12 of their homes were ransacked and burned. 2 lost. And by the way, if you lose your home back then, it wasn't like losing your home today. The State Farm wasn't there replacing your home. It wasn't. That's not how State Farm worked back then. It was, you lost your home, you lost your wealth. It was over. It was gone. And you started back at ground zero. There was no one insuring you. And if these men had wanted to file insurance, they would have had to have filed it with the king. And you know he wasn't going to pay. The truth was, is they lost it all. And so when we say they lost their homes, that was not a small thing, because most of your wealth is probably wrapped up in the home. It's probably, you know as well as I do, that that's probably the thing that if you invest in is going to hold the most of its value. And so these men lost their fortunes if they lost their home. And so to have 12 of them lost was 12 men starting from zero. And, of 9 of the 50, 6 fought and died from wounds or hardships of the war. They themselves actually went to war to fight for it. Carter Braxton of Virginia was a wealthy planter and trader, and he saw his ship sunk by the British Navy, sold his home and properties to pay off his debts, and died penniless. Had nothing at the end of his life. He sold his at the Battle of Yorktown. British General Cornwallis was taken by Thomas Nelson, had taken over Thomas Nelson's home for his headquarters, and so Nelson quietly ordered George Washington to open fire on his home. He knew the enemy was in his home, and instead of trying to protect it, "Please don't let my home get hurt," he said, "Shoot, just destroy it." Of course, his home was lost in that fight. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside as she was dying, and their 13 children all fled for their lives. His field and mill were burned to the ground, and over a year he lived in a forest by the river and hid in caves, and then returned home only to find that his kids had all vanished. They had all been scattered, and his wife had died. And these were men who gave their own lives. 2 weeks later, from exhaustion, he finally crumpled into a pile and died. These were men that gave up everything. And they gave it up so you and I could have wealth today. And you say, well, preacher, we're not wealthy. Look around the world. Look around the world. We are wealthy. We have boundary lines. And on the other side of boundary lines are nations that have nothing compared to us. In other parts of the world, in a world with the technology that we have, they will have a cell phone and a cardboard hut. And in places in Africa, that's all they have. They have a cell phone and they have a hut made of tin. In America, we have so much. We are among the wealthiest in the world, and you and I have it because we have been given the gift of liberty. We were given a gift. In other words, the way a gift works that I take what is mine and I procure something for you. I gain something for you. There is an immediate sacrifice. There has to be a sacrifice. And then that gift is given to you. We say, well, a gift is given for free. No, a gift isn't given for free. That's not how gifts work. A gift costs someone something. If it wasn't you, it was someone up further on the chain. It was somebody who came in contact with whatever gift was given to you. The gift isn't just appear out of nowhere, and neither did your liberty. And we think of the lives of those who fought on battlefields so that you and I wouldn't have to go to the battlefield to fight for our liberty. And then they went to foreign places to fight so that we didn't have to fight the battlefield in Lawrence. This is a gift for us, and it was paid for by someone else. And I tell you tonight, it is an amazing thing that you and I have been given such liberty. And in salvation, you and I recognize we were given far more than liberty. If I could just be so bold, that is to say that if we had all been born in another country, if we'd all been born in Iraq, if we'd all been born in Saudi Arabia, if we'd all been born in these places where it is against the law to believe in Jesus, to speak of Jesus, if we had been born there and then saved, we would have been given the greatest gift that could ever be given. We weren't, and I'm very grateful for that. But if we had been born in a place where we had no actual liberty to ourselves, if we had been born in North Korea and somehow, in miracle, had received Jesus Christ, we have received all the great that we need. We've received every good thing we've ever needed because we've got Jesus. But then on top of that, we have so much more. We've been given boundlessly more. In other words, Jesus is all I need, and everything else has been a huge blessing. Now consider with me this evening that if I've been given liberty, not just liberty in my nation, but if I've been given the gift of liberty and that somebody paid the price so that I could be free. Free from what? Well, Paul's argument here in chapter 5 is really a build up of the previous four chapters. Paul has argued his way towards this declaration in verse number 23 of chapter 5. And that is, you have been given liberty. You have been given liberty, therefore you are called to liberty. You are called to liberty. I want you to look there again with me in verse number 13. For brethren, ye have been called unto liberty. What does called unto liberty mean? What does that mean, to be called unto liberty? You say, well, we were called out of the world to be saved. Yes, absolutely, we were called out to be saved, but this calling, it's not that we had been called unto salvation, but he uses the descriptive term. He uses the landing pad, right? The direct object is liberty. We have been called unto liberty. This is to say, not that God called us to salvation, but God called us to the exercise of liberty. You and I have been called to the exercise of our liberty. Do we understand that tonight? That you have been called. You say, well, yes, I got called to be born again. And Christ called out to me among the world and he drew me to himself and I became born again. You've been called. Yes, I've been called. I've been called out from the world, the scattered sheep of the world. I was called out from among them and God placed me into the membership of South Knollwood Baptist Church. By the way, that's what a church means. An ecclesia is a called out assembly. We are an assembly of people chosen to be together, to grow together, to be nurtured by edify each other and to grow in our faith together. So yes, there is a calling. I've been called to be saved. I've been called unto to be a part of a church. But there is an additional call here he is describing, and that is not a call of salvation. That is not a call of church membership. It is another call that is to, we are called to express liberty. We've been called to express liberty. Well, what does that mean? Well, in chapter 5, he spells out for us what his thoughts are on liberty. I don't want to belabor the chapter, but if you kind of just hit the highlights with me, you would know some of these just kind of off the top of your head. If you're familiar at all, in verse number 1, I remind you what he says, and I'll just point it out to you in the second part of the verse. I'll just read the beginning. He says, "Stand fast, therefore." Well, stand fast where? Stand fast in the liberty wherewith Christ has what? Made us free. Be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. So Christ has called us to the expression. He has called us to express fully our liberty. What does that look like? It looks like we refrain from anything that would again entrap us. In verse number 1, he says, "And be brought not back unto bondage." So when you and I are expressing liberty under the call of God, that means we are going to stand in our liberty. We are going to stand against anything which desires to entrap us again. Well, what would that look like? Well, there are many who are trapped in sin tonight. They're trapped in sin. They find themselves again and again and again in bondage. They desire to be free and walk clear conscience and walk clear in their mind. Our culture today is quickly making it vogue to be in sin. They're making it vogue to involve ourselves in things that have destroyed homes and destroyed marriages and destroyed lives. Our culture is trying to make it popular, and then they wish to look back at us like we've lost our minds because we wish to abstain. Now, I remind you tonight that God called us to minds that are filled with purity and not unholiness. God has called us to live in habits that are in standing with his word and to live righteously. And I tell you this evening, it is not because we want to measure up against one another, but it is because in being free, we don't have to be brought into bondage of anything anymore. We don't have to be forced to think about something every time the impulse comes. We don't have to be forced into action every time temptation comes along. We don't have to be led down this path like lambs to the slaughter, like bulls to the slaughter. We don't have to go down these paths. I was reading in Proverbs chapter 7 again, and as I was reading through Proverbs chapter 7, it speaks of the simple young man who follows the strange woman into sin, and finally she beguiles him. Finally she calls him into sin, and the Bible says that as he goes in unto her, he doesn't even know it's for his own life. He didn't even know. He didn't even know that it was going to be like a dart through his liver. Why? Because in his simplicity, he just went with the impulse. He didn't even know how to stand up against his own impulse. And the sad part was it costs him his life at the end. You and I don't have to be led by that. You and I don't have to fall and stumble every single time temptation comes by. And we can stand against temptation. We can stand. We're free from this. We don't have to be bound to the law. We don't have to be bound to the law anymore. I don't have to try to work my way into God's pleasure. I don't have to try to earn God's love any longer. You say, "Preacher, well, don't you want to serve?" Of course I want to serve. I don't want to serve because he's in heaven with his big stick saying, "Oh, don't you dare mess up. Don't you mess up." That's not the way I serve God. I serve God because, my goodness, look at how much he gave for me. He gave his very best for me. He gave all for me. Why wouldn't I want to serve a holy God? I want to serve a holy God, not because I have this twisted, messed up view of his measuring stick, and if we don't meet up, we're going to be punished. No, that's the law. That's the legality. You and I are now free to serve God in a pure heart, free to serve him, not because of imposition, but because of gratitude. You and I are free to serve God. We're free. We don't have to be brought under bondage of anything again. I tell you, we understand in verse number 2 that we don't have to even begin the process of slavery and bondage. Behold, I, Paul, say unto you, verse 2, that if you be circumcised, Christ shall profit you nothing. He warns us that if we go down the path, and not only is it that you and I are free, and we are free, we have the ability to exercise our liberty. That is to say, I don't have to fall into traps. I don't have to find myself in bondage. But more importantly than that, verse number 2, it is my calling to stay clear of bondage. Not only am I free not to be bound, but it is God's calling that I never get bound. That if I've been set free, Christ didn't want me to hurry into something else to get trapped in. I mean, imagine what that would be like. You find some small bird, and maybe with a broken wing, and you take that bird and you try to repair his little wing. Maybe you take him to a vet and his wing is mended, and you let him nurture that wing, and you feed him and you take care of him, and that wing gets stronger. And you take that wing, and you take that little bird, and you set him out, and he begins to flutter his wing and flap his wing, and he takes off. It's been several. I was teaching in a high school, and we went out and watched the release of a golden eagle. We went out to this pasture land, and they had these tall timbers there in Sioux Falls. They had these tall timbers on one side of a field, and we were all the way over on the other side of the field. They said, "You're going to get to watch the release of a golden eagle." It sounded magical, you know, like it's going to be amazing. And when it's all done, we're going to cry and hug. And it might have been a golden eagle. It could have been a vulture. For as far back as I could tell, it could have been a vulture. I don't know. The truth is it was this big. It was that big, seriously. But it was really kind of cool. They let him go, and he kind of bounces around a little bit, and he flaps around. It took forever. Oh, my word. Like, come on, bird, do something. And then finally, after bouncing for a minute, he takes into the tree, and he sits at the top of these timbers. And then before long, they would, from that perch, he would sit in that perch. And they said probably a day or two, he's going to sit in that perch. And he would sit up in the top of this timber. And then ever so often, he would start a circle. And he'd begin a circle, and he'd come back to the tree. And he'd begin another circle, and he'd go up one little bit higher, and he'd come back to the tree. I think about the reason they worked so hard for that eagle was for that flight right there. They wanted that eagle free from the broken arm, the broken wing, so that he could experience flight again. But so often, we're like that little girl that sets her butterfly free, and like a bird swoops through, catches it midair and eats the butterfly, and the little girl's going, no, we're doing that to Jesus so often. Yeah, I set you free, and boom, we're caught in another sin. I set you free, boom, we're trying to hold on to the rules to make God happy instead of just chasing after him in gratitude. Oh, can I tell you, we are free. And to try to go back to bondage is totally opposite of the call. The call, as he says in verse number 13, is for something much greater. That is, if we're not careful, we can actually move away from what God wants for us. And so in verse number 5, he begins a warning. For we through the Spirit wait for the hope of righteousness by faith. What we find in verse number 5 is not only does Christ want you free, he says, I've given you hope and faith that you might live free. I don't have to go back to bondage. Why? Because I have faith and hope. I don't have to go back to the bondage of trying to measure up to righteousness. Why? Because I have faith that my walk with God is secured not by my actions, but by Jesus Christ. I can walk clean of the filth of this world. Why? First John tells us the reason is because he that hath this hope in him purifieth himself. That is to say that he, the natural response of a hope-filled heart, a heart that is focused on Jesus Christ's return to this earth, someone who has put their hope in biblical hope, and they've got their eyes on the fact that Jesus will keep his promise to come back for us, will by nature, will by very practice of hope, purge from their life sin. You are free. You are free, and not only are you free, you have been given the call to remain free. Not only have you been given the call to remain free, he has given you the tools of faith and hope that you might walk free in him. But the question is why? Look with me again in verse number 13. Brethren, who's he speaking to here? Well, he's speaking to brothers, isn't he? He's speaking to the born-again believer. Brethren, if I yet preach circumcision, in other words, if I try to bring you back under the law, why do I yet suffer persecution? Then is the offense of cross ceased. Verse number 12. I would they would even cut off which trouble you. For brethren, ye have been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. You have been called to love. If you have been called to liberty, the Bible tells us you have been called to love. We could kind of do an algebraic equation here, right? If A is equal to B and B is equal to C, then A is equal to C. That makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah. Dust off a little algebra. I told my mom I'd never use it, and look, she was right. The truth is that if A is equal to B and B is equal to C, then A is equal to C. If I have been called to liberty and I've been given liberty to love, I have been called to love. I have been called to minister and serve others. I said, no, preacher. You have been called to ministry because you're the pastor. Not as I see it. Every believer has been called to ministry. Every one of us have been called to serve in love. We have been given liberty. Okay, you're called to liberty. That means I'm free. I am free from bondage. I am free from the law. I am free, and I'm going to love my freedom. Great. Let's talk about one last piece of liberty, and that is you have been called to serve. You see, you were not called to liberty just so you didn't have to wake up in the morning with guilt. You didn't just get called to liberty so that you didn't have to try to meet up the measuring stick that's too high for any of us to reach. You have been called to liberty because God has called you to live a life of service. We've been given this opportunity. You say, preacher, that sounds like too big of a sacrifice. Can I remind you, liberty has always demanded a sacrifice? From its very inception, it has always demanded a sacrifice. Now, I do not believe your sacrifice will earn your place in heaven. I don't believe your sacrifice is redemptive in that you're going to get saved because you sacrificed. And instead, we recognize this, that Christ's salvation has freed man that we might serve. We have been free. And by the way, when we serve, we are most like the one who called us to our liberty. My friend, you've been called into liberty. We have this incredible freedom. I love that in America, not only do we know how good we have it, and maybe sometimes, not only do we know that we are among the greatest nation, we are the greatest nation because we are among the free, but I love that our freedom means something. If we're free, then we're free to go and work. We're free to go and raise families. We're free to come to the house of God and worship. We're free to love our friends and our relatives and our neighbors. And that freedom allows us the opportunity to go out and build and work and serve and do. Can I tell you the same thing is true in the church? The same thing is true in Christ, that we now have the freedom to go and love our families. The freedom to serve our wives, the freedom to serve our children, the freedom to serve our husbands, the freedom to serve and minister in the church, the freedom to reach our families for Christ. We now have liberty. More importantly, we have a call. We have a purpose. That liberty doesn't sit dormant. The liberty has a purpose behind it. My friend, you've been called to the full expression of liberty. We will find it not in just avoiding bondage and avoiding the measuring stick, but instead serving one another in love.